So with that, we'll move on to item 7, presentation of the alternate investment fees and expense report. Rishi, I believe, is handling this one. So if you want to turn on the mic. Or you could sit, either way. It is now.
Good morning, everyone. So you should have in front of you the alternative investment fees and expense report. Before we jump into the report, maybe a little bit of background. Since this is the third year that the investment staff is presenting this report to the board. And as many of you may remember, in 2017, California passed a law that requires California public pension plans to report certain fees and expenses on an annual basis at a public meeting. And so staff, together with the assistance of consultants, put this report together to meet that reporting requirement. So first, I'll walk you through just the high-level layout of the report, and then I might point you to a few specifics within the report that may be of interest to the trustees. So the first two pages you have in front of you are just an introductory memo. It describes why and how the report was put together and describes some of the information in the report. After those two pages, you turn to page 3. This is the first page of the fee report. It's a 6-page report that's divided into 3 sections. There's a 2-page section for our private equity funds, 2 pages for our private credit funds, and 2 pages for our private real estate funds. I'll start with the private equity section of the report to describe the layout. As I'm going through it, keep in mind that the column headings for each section of the report are identical. So the column headings I go through for private equity are going to be the same that you're going to see for private credit and the same that you're going to see for real estate. So on page 3, you'll see each column has a letter above it labeled A through J. On the left-hand side of the extreme left column, you have the name of the private fund. And then this page focuses primarily on showing the CSERA's portion of fees and expenses paid to each fund vehicle. And those fees and expenses are divided into a few major categories. The main buckets are management fees, carried interest, partnership expenses, and other expenses, so columns E, F, G, and I. If we flip over to page 4, you'll see here the columns are lettered K through V, so it's a continuation of the prior page. Again, on the extreme left-hand column, you have the private fund name. These are the same funds that you saw on the prior page, so they're just repeated here, so you know what you're looking at. And this page focuses most on the performance, CSERA's performance, the performance of CSERA's investment in the private funds, in the private fund vehicles. I'll point you to column T and column V on this page, total value to paid in, and since inception net IRR. The way to think about those two columns is that those are net returns to CSERA after taking into consideration the fees and expenses that were identified on the prior page. So now I'll point to a few specific items in the report, so maybe if we can flip back to page 3 for a second. And looking at the column extreme left, if we go down to Carpenter Community Bank Fund, it's about 10 rows from the top of the report. If we go across to column F, you see carried interest of $1.3 million paid to Carpenter Bank, and all of the other fee columns have zeros in them. This is an example of what you might see when a private equity fund is wrapping up. So Carpenter Community Bank sold their last portfolio investment in 2018. They made their final distribution to LPs in 2018 and also settled the final amount owed to the fund manager or the general partner, which is this carried interest of $1.3 million that you see here. If we move over to the other expenses column, column I, and go down to United States Power Fund 3 and United States and Energy Investor Funds Fund 4, you'll see that there's, and that those are about 10 rows from the bottom of the report, you'll see that there are 650,000 dollar number there, a $1.4 million number there. Those are relatively large numbers compared to the other funds on this page. The reason for that is that those two funds hold leverage at the fund level. And so CSER, these numbers, the 650 and 1.4 million, represent CSER's share of the interest expense that's paid at the fund level for those funds. If we flip over now to page 5, this is the first page of the private credit section of the report. I think the only thing I'd point out here is that the Stepstone CC Opportunities Fund, the second fund on the list, management fees, column E, it shows $2.25 million. That number is a little misleading for 2018. That includes $750,000 of fees that were paid to Stepstone that were incurred in 2017 but only paid in 2018. So without those fees, the Stepstone fee in 2018 would have been in the $1.5 million range, which is roughly where we'd expect it to be on a go-forward basis. If we flip over to page... Sorry, go ahead.
On that point, so with respect to the Stepstone fees, that's not inclusive of fees incurred for the investments that they make, is that?
That's correct. So there are additional underlying fees that are paid to the fund managers within the Stepstone vehicle.
Yes.
And so this fee is not inclusive of those.
So are those fees broken out on this report?
No. So in this report, we are reporting at the fund level. So it's CSERA's fees that are paid at the fund level. Similarly for the private equity funds that are fund of funds, for example.
Right.
We're only showing the fee that's paid to the fund of fund manager of that fund. We're not going down into one layer below and saying what fees are paid to the primary fund managers that are within that fund. That we aren't breaking the fees out to show that.
But the performance figures are net of everything.
So you anticipated my next question.
Into the portfolio. The way we report out is fees paid by what we have an interest in. So if we have an interest in something that has an underlying interest in another fund, it's reported net inside that fund, but what we paid is what's reported here.
So we have the top line number that this was the cost of chasing that alpha. Right?
Yeah.
That's okay.
But the TVPI and the net IRR are net of all fees and costs associated with it.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Okay, so if we turn to page 7,
Go ahead, John. One question while we're still on that line. The Stepstone line on page 5, partnership expenses, $555,000. There are, as you scan through this, there are two or three others that are in that lead. What goes into that $555,000?
Sure. So for Stepstone specifically, this is primarily the cost to set up the various series within each within the fund of one structure. So within the fund of one structure, we have a Series A, a Series B, a Series C, and a Series now that corresponds to a relationship with an underlying manager. And so for each of those fund one structures, we need to, if it's an SMA, for example, we need to negotiate the SMA and their fees and expenses related to negotiating that SMA and getting it set up. So this $555,000 that you see here is primarily related to Series A, B, and C, because those are the series that we had in place at the end of 2018.
Are these amounts that we're paying somebody to do that? Is that...
So there, think of things like, a lot of it's legal costs, but think of things like accounting, audit, legal back office, administrative, organizational expenses, yeah, things like that. And they're paid to a third party.
Great, thank you.
So if we move on to page 7, I'll just point out one thing here quickly. I think the first fund, AG Realty Fund 8, if you go across to column F, you see a $1 million in carried interest paid. I'll just use this fund as an example. You know, when you see relatively large absolute numbers in the carried interest column, you can think of carried interest as a share of the profits of the underlying investment that are paid to the GP. So when you see a relatively large carried interest number, what that means is that the fund overall is doing well. And so you'd hope to also see that CSERA's returns would be quite attractive in this particular fund. So if we flip over to page 8 and try to look at that, again, top to the first fund and moving over to column T and column V, we see the total value to paid in of 1.6 times C0's paid in capital and a net IRR of 15.6%. Again, this is net of all of the fees and expenses, including carried interest that we showed on the prior page. So that's all I had in terms of prepared remarks, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comments? John?
With my old accounting hat, I assume you're following the structure that we're effectively mandated to follow. There's no totals.
Yes, there aren't any totals. I calculated the totals. I think when we put the report together, looking at them on a fund-by-fund basis and looking at the fees and expenses we're paying into a fund vehicle versus the returns we're getting in that specific fund vehicle was, to me, seems a little bit more meaningful. So let's say, for example, you pay a very large carried interest amount to a particular fund manager, and that fund manager has generated a good amount in terms of returns for you. If you then total that amount and sort of the entire portfolio absorbs the impact of that carried interest payment, it might not be appropriate to do it on a total basis. But that's certainly something we can add to next year's reports and include totals if that makes more sense.
Well, that's certainly by itself a legitimate reason for not doing it. The alternative might be that you show individually. I'm assuming, by the way, carried interest is the 2 and 20, or whatever version, it's the 20 applied against the gain.
Yeah, thankfully it's lower than 20, but yes.
Yeah. So you don't know what that is until you know what the gain is.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely
but,
right.
But having said that, the board deals with the whole portfolio, so it strikes me that having an overall sense of what we're paying in fees makes sense. But also it makes sense not to lose track of the fact that in some cases we're paying more fees and we want to pay more fees because the reason we paid more fees is that we had more return.
I think it's a valid comment. And so I did the totals and roughly, you know, for the overall portfolio, if I calculate the percentage of fees based on the market value of our total private assets portfolio, we're paying about 1% overall in management fees and an additional 1% in expenses and carried interest. So overall, it's around the kind of the 2% mark, and that's pretty consistent in private equity and private credit asset classes. In private real estate, it's a little bit higher. It's around the 2.5% mark between management fees and carried interest.
That would certainly be a nice summary. In other words, fees aren't a single number to begin with. They are the basic categories and then the total.
Sure.
And percentages against the total and how that might compare with the marketplace as we know it to be in fees. I think for the board purpose, we want to make sure that we are getting competitive fees. And how do we determine that? Sure. And I know on a case-by-case basis, Tim and you and team work hard to get competitive fees.
Yes.
Can we look at it in some form that confirms that?
Sure. I think it's a good comment. So.
Yeah, and this is a regulatory requirement. We're complying with what the legislature has asked for in terms of disclosure. I will say in terms of what we look to for tracking fees, this is not the tool we use. We have other tools that we're tracking in real time, including Verisys reports, StepStone reports, various other items, but you are right. This is the letter of the law laid out here.
That's what it looked like.
And just to clarify, Rishi was talking about the private markets. It's not those basis points are indicative of what the total portfolio fee cost is.
Just the limited partnership structures. Yeah.
Jake.
First of all, thank you for the report. I thought it was a great summary, and the information is helpful. It's been a few years now that the information's been mandated to be out and published. I wonder if you've kind of noticed that the increased transparency has that led to, you know, like more competitive fee situations, or has that led, you know, the counter would be, you know, less maybe funds shying away from looking for California money?
So two parts. So on competition in terms of fees, unfortunately, I haven't seen the transparency play out into reduced fees. Often, the fund managers that we're targeting are the fund managers that have long and very strong track records, and so their ability to raise capital in the market is very strong. For example, there might be a $5 billion fund that has $10 billion in demand, and we're trying to get our allocation in that fund. And so surprisingly, very large LPs, LPs that are a significantly larger commitment size than we are, aren't able to move the needle on fees with those fund managers. So unfortunately, we haven't seen the transparency lead to decline in fees for the managers that we're targeting, and we're trying to target the best managers with long track records. So that's the first thing. Could you repeat the second part?
I wonder if the transparency requirement dissuades certain funds from seeking out California money.
So I think there's been a learning curve for managers. We actually made a commitment to a manager that. In their prior fund, they didn't have any California investors. And part of the reason for that was because they didn't truly understand what these transparency laws would require. Their concern was, is this going to eventually end up with us needing to disclose personal information about, you know, our compensation? And so because the laws were so new then, they weren't comfortable doing that. However, this year, last year when we made the commitment to that manager had gotten over that stumbling block. They felt like they had a better understanding of the California law, and they were willing to take on California investors and just explain what information they'd be willing to provide, because they'd seen a couple of years of reporting on this and seen what information was being disclosed and that they needed to disclose. So I haven't run into it, but when we do our initial underwriting of an opportunity, it's one of the first things, questions we ask is, do you have California LPs in your LP base? And if not, are you aware of the reporting requirements for California LPs? And we work through that early on, because it doesn't make sense for us to spend too much time if they're not going to be able to meet the requirements.
Great, thanks.
Any other questions? Comments? Not seeing any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.